Welcome to episode 184 of The Numbers Game. We've got a special treat today. Jason Robinson is out. I actually don't know where he is. His social calendar is so busy that I just can't keep a track of him. But he's out, but we've got something special for you. Tommy Jacket is joining us. Now, Tommy Jacket is our producer. He makes us sound good, look good, even though, you know, that's probably... We just look good. Come on, back us up. But he does all the right things for us, and we're great to have him on the show today. Tommy, welcome.
Thank you, mate. I just, as I do control the buttons, I thought I'd just bring in a bit of a drum roll for myself. I don't usually roll that one out, but since I've had to fill in for Jace, he's gone MIA. Thanks for having me, mate.
Nick, do you know where Jace is?
He'd be on a stage somewhere, drunk, sober.
Coachella.
His last known whereabouts was actually hosting something last week in Lawn.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up. Good to have Tommy though, but I'm just gonna put to bed a question that I know the whole audience will have. Is your surname Jacket or is that a nickname?
No, it is.
As in a coat, jacket?
Two T's.
Two T's.
Yeah.
Perfect. Because I'm not going to lie, when I first met you, I wasn't sure. I thought maybe because you're a producer, you know, you'd been in the, you know, the podcast game. I thought, oh, maybe that's like his, you know, like his cool name, like Tommy Jacket, the producer.
Yeah, like Marty Vids that I cop a lot. You know, like an authentic stage name that I have. You know, Tommy Jacket is the real deal.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's the only one who should sort of be changing his name to something famous like Marty, just it's gone from Marty Vidakovic is Marty because he's gone absolutely viral on the Instagram, the Numbers Game podcast, if you haven't already followed. But Marty, you have absolutely blown up, mate. The video that we posted last week is edging towards 150,000 plays.
Really?
Yeah. Have you lost, the first question is, have you lost time out of your life because you've been checking the post? Or
Well, my rejuvenation on the weekend was totally sapped because I thought I better reply because I'm not, you know, a influencer as such. I thought I'd do the right thing and get back to people. Like, you know how when people are famous, they don't get back to people. It's very, I think they should. So I was doing that this weekend and, I burned a lot of time. But there was lots of different varying comments, some scathing at me, some scathing at the government. It was like, but it was good. Hey, welcome to the party. I'm happy for all of it.
Well, it's what I want to bring forward today. I know you guys like to sort of check in on your weekends. I guess we've just heard how Marty's weekend was, checking comments on Instagram. How was your weekend, Nick?
Mine was good. Actually, I went back to the hometown where I grew up and we did the annual salami weekend. So it was, a weekend full of blood and guts. And at the end of that, you get some nice sausages and some nice salami. So
I would just say, I edit every episode and I listen to every episode almost twice because I edit and I listen. Mm. You are a licorice all sorts, mate. You grew up in regional New South Wales. You go for Adelaide Football Club and then I hear you go for some New South Wales or is it Queensland rugby team?
No, New South Wales.
Okay,
that's born and bred in New South Wales. So that's, you know, makes sense.
Try sitting next to him day in, day out. Talk about a world of rich experiences that a little boy from the Yarra Valley just hasn't seen before. It's always very entertaining. Yeah.
Mr. 150,000. Come on.
Yeah. All right. Well, I actually have the audio from the clip that was posted just to give people some context before I bring forward some of the, let's just say it was a very active comment thread. People are fired up in every which direction, but I'll bring that forward. I want to throw some of these at you, Marty, some of these comments, and I reckon there's some good talking points to lead out of it. But here is the clip that was posted.
The cost of living in Australia is now ranked more expensive than 87% of countries around the world, which is absolutely incredible. And if we look at the average wage on that smaller growth cycle, let's say average wage now is about 80,000, which is 5,633 net coming in per month. So let's say we get a loan of 800,000. you're paying $5,000 a month on mortgage repayments, and then you've got cost of living for a couple with two kids at around about $6,400 per month. So all up now, to get into an average price home, you're spending $11,400 a month, and you're bringing in a net income, two people on an average wage, of $11,266 per month. You can't afford it. It's literally, you can't afford the average. You've got families that are having disputes about having enough money. You can't have a one-parent breadwinner because you're just decimating your ability to live. And these are some of the concerns that are coming up. But when you look at that from 10 years ago to what it is now, we definitely need a rate reduction in regards to allowing people back into the market and being able to live.
I mean, just hearing that again, I think we should send that to Parliament House.
Oh, like, I got goosebumps.
With a bit of Hans Zimmer, absolutely makes that sing. No wonder it went viral, Marty.
Do you think it was the music? Because the rest of it's just facts. But what's amazing with that, even, you know, I've been following the thread, obviously, is when we talk about the average, there's two sides to that fence. And it's like, depending on which side of the fence as to, you know, how people perceive the comments, which is always really interesting. But even hearing it back, I'm going, I had a conversation this morning with someone that had lost a business last year, and they were actually earning half decent money, but just felt decimated that their business wasn't working. And, you know, and they had their kids and their family still together, which is a great thing, but they don't know where to start. And they just feel like, you know, this is sort of some of the things you don't see in the everyday mass media that goes on. And they were so upset. But they just felt ashamed. And I just said to them, you've got your family. And I said, that's the greatest asset you could ever have. And you've been able to get through this together to the other side to start again. And it's just taking that one step forward now, maybe putting something aside a little bit a month and just starting to, you know, build themselves back up. But talk about just a hit on the psyche of the people, and it's tough. Yeah, it's tough when that happens, and that's the extreme. But you go, for me, that's almost supporting them at a human level beyond anything else, because they just feel terrible. So it's obviously, yeah, having a bit of a definite pinch out there.
Yeah, I think it's definitely hit a nerve, and there is, I guess the word is a bit of a blame game happening. In which I think is probably just a defense mechanism that, you know, comes up when you are doing it tough, because it's quite easy to look outside and say, God, here are all the problems. It's so clear to us. And so, there's a bit of a blame game. Broken this up into, these are some of the comments, Marty and Nick. The first one is the blaming of the government and policy. And so one of the comments is, the fiscal management by the federal government should be held to account, as was done under the time of Whitman. So anything there, Marty, for you?
I think was it Whitlam?
Whitlam. But let's just say that is what was written. Exactly.
No, I think, look, we've got to go back to even, you know, the Reserve Bank, you know, at 2% interest rates, saying load up, keep the economy flowing, you know, COVID's hitting. And there's a lot of good people that got into property at those levels that could afford to get into those properties at that level. But, you know, 14 rate increases is a black swan event. You know, they would not be assuming if rates went up, they'd go up 14 times. So the fact you've got three times the repayments that you probably had back then is a considerable hit. And I think there's got to be some accountability somewhere that people just didn't see that coming. So it's going to have an impact. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, well, hindsight's a wonderful thing, as we know. And I think we were dealing, when I say we, I mean the government, so not us, obviously, and the RBA, but they were dealing with something they hadn't seen before. So you look back and you think, geez, okay, well, they were doing everything in their power to make sure that we didn't fail and that people could still survive. But hindsight, again, is a wonderful thing. And you look back now and you think, well, how, like, even if you look at historic trends and what's happened when you provide stimulus, how did you not see this coming? record low interest rates, almost free money to a degree. That's what it felt like. Plus the stimulus that went into business, you know, the PAYG relief, plus incentives for different types of trades. And I don't know, you kind of look back now and you think, well, that was always going to happen. Like, people were always going to spend all their money that they were provided, and we're always going to have these inflation issues. But I don't know. It's so interesting to sit back and watch it all unfold now, and you can only hope that lessons have been learnt, and that next time something happens that's similar, that there's some different moves made. But who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it leads on to a flow-on effect of that is blaming corporations, which is there was a bunch of comments around that sort of thread, and one of them was, what about Woolworths, Coles, Bunnings, ripping everyone off, including the farmers, so they can make them $1 billion per year? How much is enough for living? Woolworths and Coles drive up the cost of living, which in turn drives up interest rates. How much do you think big corporation impacts all this stuff?
Massively, massively. And what really annoys me is the microscope on big corporation at the moment in relation to carbon credits and, you know, doing the right thing for the universe. I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but this is what annoys me. The carbon credits, I think there's so much focus in particular areas, and then other areas don't get the focus that they need. And I think there's been some high level focus on, you know, looking after consumers and the you know, pricing that happens within supermarkets of late, but it's not enough. If you look at what they're doing in other areas or what they're having to do in other areas such as fair work, gender equality, carbon credits, where's most important? And for me, it's looking after the mums and dads who are really struggling to make ends meet at the moment. There just hasn't been enough focus on it, and it's blatantly obvious as to what's happening out there, not just with mums and dads but with farmers and, you know, the raw end of the stick that they're getting. And there is some noise, but it's just not enough. So that's what really frustrates me, where the energy is going at the moment.
And that's, I guess, the energy is also flowing to people looking at others in the community, you know, blaming exorbitant lifestyle. So one of them was, but the average family has two late model cars, laptop computers, all have mobile phones and the latest clothes in, and an 800,000 plus mortgage, and want all the other stuff like holidays. I do agree with this guy, but people need to live within their means.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic point. And I agree with that. You know, a lot of the times wealth is what you don't see, you know, and we're in a society where, you know, everyone's trying to keep up with the Joneses, not only in real life, but on social media as well. So, you know, you need to be conservatively looking at things for a rainy day. It's just when there's free money, like Nick was talking about earlier, people take advantage of that and leverage up, including the major corporations as well. Their expenses go up with inflation. They've got costs, but they'll generally leverage the price to where the market will pay until the market stops paying. You know, so they'll take advantage of that in times of inflation, and that happens across the board. Because again, even when you think about it as a business owner, you also need to be able to pay wages to keep people employed as well. So you've got an argument both ways, but it's sometimes just taken to the extreme in regards to what they will try and you know, increase to, which is unfair. But again, you know, people we talked about in previous episodes, you know, looking in regional areas or buying townhouses that are more within people's means. And the one good thing about interest rates going up and people being capped as to how much they can buy for is they really have to put some thought into where they can buy for the money they can afford at a whole different level. So we'll come out of this better in the end, but what's the damage in the interim until we get to that point? Every business is budgeting at high levels, you know, managing expense. We've been through it as well. 100% you have to do these things, and you have to be in a position where you're okay today as the new foundation at its most challenging to then create, you know, a better tomorrow. But the problem being, what is the collateral damage in getting to this point? For like I said, I had a person, the couple that lost their business last year just because things weren't going well, feel terrible. It's going to take them psychologically years to recover. I hope not. But, you know, that's the sort of damage you don't see.
Yeah. And then there's some other people blaming immigration. One of the comments is immigration, nothing has kept pace with it. More people equals more competition for products, houses and services. Successive governments have been addicted to immigration to keep the economy going. And, where do you think that plays its role?
Well, at the end of the day, you need GDP to keep growing. And the way that you do that is with immigration. So it's all good and well for people to come out and say, well, you've got to cut the immigration back. But that has so many other ramifications. The reality is immigration continues to grow the GDP, which is continues to grow economic stability and gives everyone jobs, not just immigrants. So, you know, I don't think you can blame immigration for this. At the end of the day, immigration needs to continue to happen to grow our GDP, and I can see why the government is going down that path. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but there's no one fix, and there's no one blame, unfortunately.
Yeah, and definitely with the undersupply of housing, it poses problems in regards to keeping property prices up and continuing to grow. But it's a part of the methodology that's been there, you know, forever and a day now. So it's not that the methodology's changed. It's just probably, yeah, at this point when people are struggling, it's easier to pinpoint stuff like that.
There was a few people questioning some of the numbers, Marty, and I know you like to double check, cross every, you know, T, dot an I when it comes to your numbers. I think people are just blown away. There was one person saying $6K just for living for a month. You know, ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I've got two young kids. I tell you what, that's pretty close to what I'm spending a month on my family outside of my mortgage,
average.
Outside of, you know, these other things. And, yeah, it stacks up pretty quickly. There was also someone saying that the average wage of $80,000, you're having a laugh. I think there may be some confusion between minimum and average.
Yeah, yeah. And actually that's gone up to 90, can you believe, on average as well.
Nick, I know that you wanted to chat about minimum wage, which is, I think, a good time. I've heard this morning when we're recording this that they'd had a bunch of meetings, and the people that everyone's blaming are putting their heads together, deciding on our future and, you know, all of this. Give us the lowdown.
Yeah, well, there was a decision by the Fair Work Commission to increase the minimum wage by 3.75%. And it just got me thinking, you know, we all need to earn more money, 100%. And, you know, in today's society, more than ever, we need more money, you know, based on the conversations that we're having here. But I just thought about, you know, and Marty mentioned this at the start, but sitting on the other side of the fence, which is small business owners, and the gap that we've got that's growing between small business and large business, and the inability now for small business to make ends meet. So we had a 3.75% increase, as I just mentioned. Last year we had a record increase. It was 5.something%, but they also increased the baseline. So it was actually about an 8% increase in the minimum wage last year. On top of that, you've got the super guarantee that continues to grow, moving to a maximum of 12%. So a few years ago it was 9%. So Tommy, you work for someone, you're on $100,000 a year, your employer has to pay you $9,000 in super. That is currently 11.5% or $11,500, and that is going to 12%, which would be $12,000. So if we look at what the minimum wage cost was, and I've just gone on a 40-hour week here just to make it easy, but in 2022 I worked out someone with super would have been earning $48,727 if they were on the minimum wage working a full-time week. Fast forward to 2025, so this is next year, where the 12% has kicked in for super, currently 11.5, that same individual would be earning, including super, $56,145. Now, that's a $7,418 annual increase over the space of 3 years. Now, you know, you go to most small businesses, they're probably going to have three or four of those staff. Hypothetically, they've got four staff. Their wage cost has now gone up 30K per annum. And that's then going to change or, I guess, influence their decision as to whether or not, number one, they retain people, number two, they or they bring more people on. So, you know, you look at small business and the increasing demise, I guess, of small business. Look, we're at record numbers of small business failure at the moment. Sectors such as hospitality and retail are paying up to 50% in their gross revenue in labour costs. Now, that's just not sustainable. Now, I know in our business, if we get to 50% in labour costs, it's game over. You can't.
It's critical.
It's game over. It doesn't work. And then you look at the other things that they're paying more for now, utilities such as electricity, gas, insurance is through the roof. Interest rates, if they've got some lending in their business, through the roof. So, you know, I don't know what the solution is, but I thought it'd be a really good discussion because on one end of the scale, we're saying the average age, not the minimum wage, can't make ends meet, can't buy a property. The other end of the scale, we've had a big increase on the minimum wage, which means small business is really struggling to compete with big business. And then what happens is big business just continue to pay more for salaries because they can, and small businesses can't compete. And the days of the small business owner are obsolete. And, you know, I put it to you, Marty, you're in this space and I know you're passionate about this space, but I think for some industries it just doesn't work. And if you had to question 4 or 5 years ago about whether or not you take the plunge into small business, particularly if you've got to hire people, now that decision's even harder. And I think most people would look at it in the current environment and say, well, I might as well just go work for someone because I know that I can earn X amount at a big corporation and not have everything else that goes with being a small business owner and at the same time not making any money.
And how hard are those people working, the stresses that they have, you know, given that the money's not coming in? And it's just it's a travesty, really, because like you said, it's like this is why retail and hospitality is struggling so much, put on, you know, inflated rents too that are hitting. So it's a race to the bottom, really, and people have got to make that decision. When is that point where it's just not feasible to continue? And that's okay. Sometimes, you know, you can be climbing halfway up a mountain and know it's the wrong mountain and you're going to die at the top. So there's a point in time where it's okay to come back down, set your foundations and restart again before the damage is done. And I read an article on the weekend with a lady opening up a tapas bar, which was a vegan tapas bar, I think it was in Carlton, and it was like a lifelong dream. And she was in it for 18 months and basically cooked it and just had no way other than to let it go and sell it for next to nix. And she's still 120 in the hole at 30 years of age. She was glad she had the experience, but it's a big hit. You know, that people now got to find a way to go back to work with debt on their shoulders based on an experience like that. And that's and she doesn't want to go bankrupt either, because that sort of, it's half of its tax debt, you know, family and friends have borrowed money, a lot of shame involved. And yeah, sometimes it's circumstances, sometimes it's the poor operations of the business owner, you know, that happens as well. So it's not just total excuse on what's going on, but it's certainly something we need as a society to wrap our arms around in some way and say, you know, helping people through these moments to come out the other side, because otherwise there's bigger issues that we're facing that go outside of business and finances.
Yeah. As a small business owner, I don't know if it's exacerbated this feeling I get, but when I'm walking down the street and I see a small restaurant like that or a small business, and I can't help but just do some numbers in my head, understanding where I'm at, what I'm doing, my cash flow, my debts, you know, all these things. And I just look at these, some businesses, and I feel extremely bad. Like walking past a vegan restaurant, you know, they put all their heart and soul into it. Mm. And you're thinking, did they not see that model was, you know, this is the problem. It's hindsight or it's external to them. But you could walk down the street and predict which businesses probably will and won't work, and you probably will get some wrong, but majority I don't think you will.
Yeah, and it's actually a really good point, Tommy, because I think you've got the luxury, and I don't want to cross boundaries here that I shouldn't be, but you're service-based, right? And a lot of what you do is based on your hours and your own expertise. Mm. So you've got the labour side and you get paid for the labour. Of course, you've got costs such as travel and whatnot. But think about having to pay rent. Think about having to pay staff. Think about having to pay for food or goods that you have absolutely no control over what the price of those food or goods are, electricity to turn the lights on at a venue. You have to look at it now and you have to say, well, you'd be mad. You'd be mad to go into hospitality. Mm. And that is why you're seeing too in the hospitality game, the bigger groups keep growing. So you look at all the big restaurants, whether it's Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, wherever it is, most of them are owned by a group or a consortium that owns a dozen of those places. And they've got the model worked out and they just keep opening new ones. The mum and dad on the, you know, at the local restaurant, it's really difficult. You know, there would be times that they would go home and they wouldn't make a dollar for the day if anything they went backwards.
There is, this is one part a little tip, other part telling of the times, but there's an app called Eat Club. Are you across this?
No.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I actually used to use it about 6 or 7 years ago, and then I bumped into an old school friend last week, and he said, oh, I'm working at a startup. Oh, whereabouts? Eat Club. It's like, oh, mate, I used to use that. Now he's a part of the business. But you download this app. It basically tells you restaurants in your area where the discounts are. And so right now I can jump on. I'm in, Bayside, and there's a True South, a great venue on the beach. 30% off you can get across your entire bill. So you could go and rack up $100 and save $30.
It's big.
Alcohol as well. But it's interesting looking at that, just seeing some of these businesses, and you could be positive, looking at it and saying, well, they're maybe paying for a lead. Maybe they're breaking even to have someone in their venue. Maybe on a Saturday, there was a venue on Saturday night in Chapel Street, 50% off the whole bill. So we could go there and drink, not with Jason, he'd bloody run that bill way up, but no, he's a good guy. But 50% off, and I just thinking about the numbers there. There really has to be. It's just to get people in the venue, and from a consumer point of view, it's amazing savings. My family and I just go out, easily drop $80 to $100 for, and we're not, everyone's not getting a meal. It might be sharing a bunch of stuff, but if you can go out and get something for $45 as a family, like those things are amazing.
Yeah, well, you can't cook it for that these days. Yeah. Like that's reality. It's and I guess it's to get eyes on the venue. It's probably also to give their staff a job. Yeah. Like they've got to retain these people and make sure that there's somewhere, or they've got a job to actually come to day in, day out. So if you can't guarantee work, then how difficult does it then get to get staff back?
Yeah, I guess the luxury I had, service based business, as opposed to something like a cafe where you're trading to pay for the operating costs. Like these people aren't looking, whereas I know I can leverage, my time to make more money. But I feel that pain on that type of a business model.
Yep. And as I said, the bigger guys continue to get bigger. And there was some stats here that I had. Just comparing, I guess, big business to small business, but spending in supermarkets up 5% over the last 12 months, whereas spending at butchers down 1%. So there's a 6% variance there. Spending at your local greengrocer on average down 2.5%. So a 7.5% variance there. Spending with department stores, so your Myers and your David Jones, has been stable, hasn't really moved. Spending in retail clothes down 8%. So an 8% variance there in the last 12 months. So big businesses, those with turnover above 250 million going bust, has actually fallen 20%. So the chances of a big business going bust has fallen 20%. A major credit agency says 20% more small businesses are at risk of collapse than this time more a year ago. Food service businesses are now paying invoices on average 18 days late. Construction and retail businesses are paying invoices on average 14 days late and growing. The rate of retail businesses entering insolvency has more than doubled in 2 years. And just the sheer portion of businesses that were rated as severe risk of failure. So this is stats that come from a credit reporting agency. So the portion of businesses that were rated as a severe risk of failure in the coming year has jumped 80%, or in the past year, sorry, has jumped 80%. So Chalk and Cheese basically says that all small business are on the verge of going broke, while big businesses continue to grow and, I guess, take up that market share. Because every time there's a small business that shuts, you know, that doesn't mean there's one around the corner. You know, you might have one greengrocer or one butcher in your local area. If that shuts down, you're not going to the butcher in the next suburb. Your only choice is to go to a Coles or a Woolies. And that's the problem that we're seeing at the moment. I don't know what the answer is. I just sort of bring it up because I know Marty will have it.
Oh, no, they're pretty damning stats when you look at that and you go, I guess they just can't compete price-wise, small business, whereas, you know, the big businesses have pricing power. And, they'd be happy to make less money in order to get more of the market. You know, they could turn that on a switch if they want to, whereas the small business owner can't. And it's, I'm pretty shocked at those stats as to, you know, for small business owners. And you really have to do the right thing by... You've got families attached in small business. You've got families attached in big business too. But, I mean, small business, you know, some people never come back to run another business, you know, when they go through a really, really difficult circumstances because they think, why would I go through the stress? But I think you just come back to it logically and go, do the numbers work and be careful that your passion doesn't take you into a place where you don't want to be. I just continue along that thread, come back to numbers and metrics and, you know, your own well-being around it, because some of the dilemmas it can cause, you know, personally and to family can be quite considerable. So I just say, or you've got to go into absolute hyperdrive and think about it. You can't throw more effort at bad money. So for whatever reason your model's not working, it's not making money, borrowing more money is not going to get you out of it. You know, it's like you've got to think of ways or be innovative to create more ways of revenue, diversify. And that's the last thing you're thinking about when you're stressed, right? But you've almost got to pull the needle out of the haystack, or you've got to find one component of your business that is working well and go all in on that. And just grow that wherever that is, you know, try and really be specific on it and go all in and try and get yourself through. So, but not easy, not an easy predicament.
Yeah. All I'll say, Nick, is that we put a bit of Hans Zimmer to that and yours. Geez, there's another episode coming on a viral video from the numbers game.
Can't wait for my numbers to get questioned. There goes my Saturday night.
But it also in regards to, if you're thinking about getting into business, this goes on the other side of the fence, right? You go, there's opportunities now to be able to buy in businesses, you know, potentially at cheaper prices, but you want to make a considered approach as to what you're buying into and what industry you're buying into. So source and research what industries are actually doing okay and doing well, because you might get something at a lower value than what, you know, and add your own specialized skill into it to grow that business, but you just don't want to be in those high risk industries. So again, wherever there's pain, you know, there is opportunity, and it's terrible to say, but actually you might be helping a business owner get out of a really tricky situation as well.
Well said, Marty. Well said. Well, this is where Jace usually wraps it up. So I'll throw back to you, Marty. I reckon you've got to take on both the beautiful ending and also the goodbye.
I'll do my best, Jace. I'll do my best. Thank you for listening. Please like, share any of our social posts. Make them go viral. Make them go viral, because it just makes us want to do more of this stuff. We're egomaniacs, obviously. But no, we appreciate all the comments, and it's been great to see people's different perspectives. So keep engaging with us. We're here to help. We're here to be tested and questioned. Until next episode, thank you for jumping in. Tommy, great to have you on board. Game over.
This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed.